This is Mira. I had a question for Jay, but I'm happy to.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
All right. So I was really curious, Jay. I think you're absolutely right that just statistically, most of us know current or former public school teachers. I was one, and more so than we necessarily know current public school parents. I have wrestled, however, with this the issue of what this question of what parents want. You know, when you look at the surveys that we've seen over the summer and even over the last few weeks, and we've seen that the parents that we imagine most need and would benefit and where their kids most need and would benefit from open schools, namely low-income families and families of color and families whose parents are essential workers, are we see pretty systematically those who are least comfortable with schools reopening and most cautious about sending their kids back even if the schools do reopen. I think understandably because they have the least trusting relationships with the public schools and because insofar as their communities have been hardest hit by COVID and because they don't trust their public schools to be safe because they won't have enough PPE, they don't have adequate ventilation, the teachers haven't had sufficient training and so forth, it means they're kind of damned if they do and damned if they don't, right? So they have greater risk if they send their kids back, and they have greater risk if they keep their kids at home. And I'm just curious how you think about that.
Well, I entirely agree. But I think, look, there's a great diversity of preferences out there among families about what they need and want from schools, and there are probably a great diversity of ways that that can best be delivered. One of the difficulties that we're having that I think Rita pointed out well is we're having difficulty allowing parents and local schools the flexibility to offer a variety of options for people that might best fit their particular situations. But your point also, though, makes me wonder a little bit about what you thought about Rick's opening remarks, because Rick was saying that schooling basically is an engine for inequality because it benefits the advantaged more than the disadvantaged in general. And you, I think, correctly point out that technology-based education doesn't seem to help that. It may exacerbate it. So what do you think could help it? Well, how would you address Rick's concern?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's funny, on our comprehensive exams for our second year PhD students in education at Harvard, we often ask some version of the question, are schools engines of opportunity and equality, or are they systems that actually just entrench the inequality and also injustice that, exists in society? Because I think, they're really good arguments on both sides, but I agree with Rick. I think his assessment is right, that we do have all of these ways in which we seem to entrench inequality as opposed to promote equality. Frankly, my approach would be to have a really massive program to try to promote school integration, because I think that class-based and race-based integration, just because I think that is the one thing that we've seen over the last century that more reliably than any other move gets more equitable resources and peers and outcomes than anything else is changing who goes to school together. But that obviously is not an answer to the question of, how should we think about equitable education during a pandemic? Frankly, I think everything that we're seeing is just going to be the continued entrenchment and exacerbation of social inequity and injustice that we already see, which is not a very optimistic perspective.
Yeah, I just had a friend text me that, this is a very depressing call, and he's waiting for the minute of optimism at the end, which we will eventually get to. But do you have any? Can you give us some optimism before the last minute of what you think might be helpful? Different people here are laying out different plans, right? Joel is saying let's use technology to promote greater equality during the pandemic. Rita saying, let's facilitate greater flexibility and options. What do you see as a possible path during the pandemic?
All right, so here are a couple possible paths. I think one is celebrate the fact that school districts around the country shifted to feeding kids the minute that they were shut down and recognized that that was their primary obligation before they did anything else. Admit now that as a country, we are using schools as a mechanism through which we're feeding over 50% of children up through age 17, and say, you know, schools shouldn't be in that business, but we should be in the business of making sure that kids' nutritional needs are met. And so take that really seriously, and take seriously also all the other ways in which we are revealing that we're meeting kids' social welfare needs through schools. You know, that's medical care, dental care, therapeutic services, social services, assessments for, abuse or neglect, and say, you know, these are really, really essential services. They're not what schools were designed for. They're not what we assess schools on. So let's make a commitment to continuing these services, but actually create more robust institutions and systems and policies so that they can happen without those being the things that distract schools from the job of teaching and learning. And then I think the other thing is I agree with Rita that enabling flexibility and really local decision making with really good guidelines from science and also an addition of resources so they can meet those guidelines would be fantastic. You know, I was talking to a school principal here in Boston a couple of weeks ago who said, I don't know what to do. I have, it's a mostly low-income school that serves mostly kids of color, but has a small, basically white and actually African-American middle-class parent group. And they started contacting her saying, we want to set up learning pods because we don't trust the Boston Public Schools to reopen, but we want to make them more equitable. So can you help us get in some of the lower income kids who live in neighborhoods that aren't ours and we don't really know how to connect with them? And she said, you know, I don't know, am I supposed to be doing that? Am I supposed to be planning for reopening? Or should we try to actually set up childcare ourselves in, it's an elementary school. And she said, but how could we set up childcare and not offer education? It was the exact problem that Rita was talking about. And I really felt for her because she desperately wanted to do the right thing and so did all of the parents. And they were feeling really stymied. And if they could have come together and planned together, I think they would have come up with some really interesting and creative solutions. So I do think that empowering really local decision making, along with providing the resources, could lead to a real flowering of educational innovation.
Rita, what do you make of Mira's comments, particularly the role of schools? It seems like Mira was emphasizing, I'll call it the non-educational aspects of the school environment. Where should learning be on that process, and how should we focus on maximizing learning in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think we did see that some of the first things that happened in March were this, you know, what are we going to do about child, if the school's closed, what are we going to do about child care, and how are kids going to eat? Right. And I think that people really did feel like, well, this kind of laid bare what people are really in public education for, right, that they're not in it. Learning is not the main thing, or education is not the main thing. They're providing certain economic services for children that maybe should be provided by other entities. And, I mean, I think it's good that they did find ways to provide some of those services, certainly not childcare, but that was, their hands were tied on that front. But I do think that going forward, I mean, part of the thing that will make it difficult for schools to be flexible and to accommodate situations like this, I mean, not that we should expect a pandemic to be recurring every year, but different things do happen, is being weighed down by having to perform all of these non-educational functions, right? The more jobs an institution takes on, the more sort of unwieldy it becomes. And so I think, I mean, I would disagree with Mira, and I would say we should reconsider that we have saddled the public schools with all of these tasks that maybe would be better done by other institutions in society, because it may actually make the schools less effective at doing the thing that we, I think we want them to do, which is education. And, you know, the data so far hasn't been extensive just because we're still in the situation. But, you know, there was a report, I think, a couple of weeks ago put out by the Fordham Institute about the, you know, I think they did 8 or 9 big charter networks and how they had responded to the pandemic. And their findings, though they're sort of preliminary because it's still ongoing, were that the charter networks, which have many sort of fewer functions, are smaller, are a little bit more nimble, were better at immediately pivoting to online instruction, at having more contact with families, more regular contact, being more in touch with the students. So I think there are real advantages to having slightly more nimble educational institutions, including public ones. I mean, I don't think that we should scrap the public schools or anything like that. I think we should think about how we can make the public schools serve students better. And I do think, I mean, people are going to come back to the public schools. I don't think that this is like a long-term destination, although I do think that a lot of people who have experienced homeschooling this year may have discovered that they like it. And there are definitely certain kinds of kids for whom school is not beneficial, but they're not the majority. So, I mean, I think that one of the things that this may end up doing is giving schools a kind of wake-up call and, you know, that they need to become more nimble and be more flexible and sort of more able to accommodate students' needs. So I'm not actually that pessimistic. I just think that this particular fall and possibly spring have been pretty disastrous. But I do think that the necessity of schooling in America and the need, especially for public institutions of education, are going to, you know, help people find ways to make them work again.
Can I just respond to that? This is Naomi. I want to just say, I mean, I am skeptical that there are other institutions that are going to be able to provide these services to kids in the same way that schools do or that we would necessarily want them to. I mean, one kind of disappointing part of all this that you've seen is for parents and families that are receiving, for instance, cash assistance from either, you know, state or federal programs, there's actually surprisingly little contact between, you know, caseworkers that are helping with those programs and the families. The move over to, you know, debit cards for everything, you know, may have made things more efficient, but it's also provided us with fewer points of contact with those families. And so, you know, I actually think that, you know, schools could be, you know, as much as you don't want to burden them too much, I think they're actually, because they are providing that regular contact with kids, you know, that they were actually having parents come to the school to pick up meals and things like that, which may seem to some people like an inconvenience, is actually a great way, you know, not just in this sort of nefarious sense, I think about it, you know, to keep eyes on kids, but also to make sure that we're still having contact with the adults in those families so that if they do need help, you know, when we could see that they need help or they have somebody to in person ask for help, as opposed to just sort of moving these over to some other institution that might be able to address those physical needs, but won't address the kind of person-to-person contact that they should be having.
You know, this is Keith. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Keith.
You know, I was just going to say, I believe that education is definitely the number one priority of schools. Having myself worked in public schools for many years, the reality is those services were given to schools not because they want to distribute food or they want to become dentist's office. It's because when you have a student in your class who's hungry, anything that's coming out of my mouth as a teacher is not going to register. They need to have those basic needs taken care of. And I think, so I don't think it's that there's another entity that can provide those services. Education is the number one thing for schools in order for that to happen for all kids in an equitable way. Then those services need to be provided at the school in order for, you got to take care of their basic needs before you can do the learning. And all that COVID exposed to us, I think, is wow, schools do so much more than just teach the Pythagorean theorem.
So, Keith, this is Jay. I mean, there is another institution that does feed and clothe children and take them to the dentist and so on. They're called families, right? So don't you think, I mean, obviously families struggle and need help, but do you have any concern that if schools begin to assume primary responsibility for more and more of these functions, that it might alter the relationship between
parents and children and between parents and schools?
No, but you know, my kids didn't learn to talk from school, but I still send them there. Families don't just provide the basic needs. They also provide learning experiences for their kids. So I guess I'm saying in an equitable way. Where my kids go to school, the population of students that need those services is not as high as in other areas. So what I'm saying is, in order for schools to do their job of educating kids, there are some responsibilities that they need to take on. Some days, you know, now that I'm doing remote learning as a parent, I would love if the school was the primary caregiver of my own children. But I'm definitely not saying that. I'm saying that they do need to provide some of those resources for kids just so that the kids can actually learn.